Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Welcome back to Dorothy and the Dealer. We have our special guest that we love chatting with. We've just had a bit of a giggle before we've come on just because of the way he speaks and says certain things. I'm sure he's going to come up and say some of those things.
They're medical, but they sound really fucking inappropriate.
It's very cool.
Yeah, last time I was
with Dr. Dave.
Welcome. It's good to have you again, mate.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. Amazing to be here.
Yeah. Do you feel a bit starstruck? Do you feel a little bit?
A little bit, yeah.
Do you?
Oh my God!
I knew you would.
Come dancing with the stars.
He was telling me last time. He was saying that he was a little bit starstruck when he was on the phone with us, and I'm like, you should be.
Honestly.
The last time I was with Dave.
That is a direct quote.
The last time I was with Dave, we were up in Kalamunda at the hills. Yeah, lift that a little bit closer.
There you go.
Gotta get it close, yeah. And I rang Dave. I messaged Dave. I said, "Look, we're shuttling today. Do you want to come?" And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And I said, "Okay, I'll see you there about 1:30." At about 12:30, I'm like, I messaged him. I said, "Well, we probably need to get it closer to 2:00." And he goes, "Oh, do you want me to come over to your place?" And I'm like, "Yeah, well, yeah, you can leave from my place. I'll try to bike up on the rack." I said, "Where are you?" And he goes, "I'm nearly at Kalamunda." And I'm like, "How are you getting there?" And he goes, "I'm riding." I'm like, "You're riding to Kalamunda from literally in the flats." The hills, and then when you get there, you're going to shuttle all day. And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, I'll be good." I'm like, "No, Dave, no, that's how people seriously injure themselves. By the time they get there, they're absolutely rooted."
How did you go?
It was a battle. I did ride up that hill that goes up to John Forest, Midland, and up the median strip.
And then you shuttled all day.
Up the median
strip. And then I tried to get the train home, but they were all disturbed service, so I rode home as well. So it was about 50 or 60 k's.
And he turned up in a Hawaiian shirt, and like we're all in full face helmets, you know, elbow pads, knee pads, padded shorts. And I'm like, "Have you got padded shorts?" No, padded shorts. I think were you in long pants?
I was.
But yeah. Having said that, Mitch, you do not look the most attractive when you're riding.
I look like a pro.
Neither does a guy in a Hawaiian shirt.
No.
Which incidentally has many holes in it now from falling off.
Did you tell everybody why, Dev? Because I did say to you, "Man, this is really dangerous and you can really hurt yourself." And Dave hurt himself.
Did he?
Yeah, he
And you were riding.
And then I rang him the next day and I'm like, "Hey, go, mate. How you feeling?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm a bit sore." I'm like, "Well, you should be from falling and from riding." How many k's did you do? I think that's a lot.
It's a long way.
It's a long way. Yeah. Yeah. So did you cry at one point? Like, did you actually?
Yeah.
You cried at one point, right? Yeah, I know.
The whole way. So I had a restorative bath the next day.
Yeah.
Went and got some shin pads and some knee pads.
You?
Yeah.
I told you to go get some shitties. Mm-hmm. Did you get a full face yet? You're going to need to get a full face. The first time you land on your face, you realize, "Oh shit," and lose a tooth. You think, "Oh, I probably should get a full face."
You know? There you go.
Anyway, so how are you? How are you going? Are you all right? Have you recovered? I mean, I know it was like 6 weeks ago. Have you recovered?
6 weeks.
That was about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I just rode here, so I'm fresh again.
And the other thing people need, is that your dual suspension at the front?
It is.
Because I was walking past going, "Oh, that looks like a giant rein, what is it?" And so it is your Julie at the front. Mm-hmm. So just so you know, he's also riding on a downhill dual suspension. And they call it a downhill because it's not meant to go?
Uphill.
Right,
excellent.
Defying the odds.
Defying the odds. So you said you had a song for us. Let's get off the bike talk now. You had a song for us.
For sure. I feel like last time... Mitch started talking about Mungo Jerry in the summertime. You know that one.
What was that song? Give it a start, restart. Da-da-dum, da-dum, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-
In the summertime. You've got women, you've got women on your mind.
Yeah, great song. Great song. You ever seen the video?
Yeah.
I think it's black and white or something.
It's got colour. Well, yeah. There's probably a few, but he's got the big mutton chops.
Yeah.
Real interesting looking guy. Yeah, big fro.
I think they were just a one hit wonder as well.
I don't know. Yeah. You sort of talked about last time that song being linked in your mind to Lovely Day by Bill Withers.
Yeah.
They're actually released 7 years apart.
Oh, are they?
So Mungo Jerry's 1970 and wow. Bill Withers is
77. Do you know what it reminds me of?
Mm.
In Ireland. Summer. In Ireland, because of course. In Ireland, because the summers in Ireland when we were kids, we got like 8 weeks off for holidays. If you were in secondary school, you got 3 months off for holidays. Primary school, you got 3 months. Secondary school, you got 2 months. And we, you know, the summers in Ireland were really quite lovely. You know, we actually had summers. But mm-hmm. as we got older, they just disappeared. you might get a couple of days, literally in the summertime, where it would be warm, you know? But yeah, those songs remind me of back then.
Nostalgia. People are saying that with the weather and the seasons, that I sort of hear people universally talking about how things have changed from the good old days. It used to be this deep of snow in the city. Now it's, you know, seems to be.
But I think it's important, you know, seasons change. It's just what happens.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and the cycles change, and that is what goes on. It's just because it's happening within our lifetime. But even with this whole lockdown situation and COVID and everything, that, you know, the amount of pollution has reduced in certain cities and da-da-da-da-da. So I definitely think that that has affected the amount of, well, it's affected everything. But the way I see it this year, we've had a lot more rain this year than it feels like we've had any other year that I've been in Australia. There's been a ton of
I think this is the wettest winter in something like 20 years.
Oh,
or
is it?
50 years, something like that.
Yeah.
You do your homework, don't you?
No.
Yeah, kind of.
on some topics.
Who would have known that the gap between in the summertime and that other song was 7 years.
Well, I knew that you would want to know, so I looked it up.
See what I mean?
So let's talk about what we want to talk about today, Dave. I mean, we had great feedback from your last podcast, your last session here with us, and it was great. I really, really loved that conversation. And I know you want to talk about some other bits and pieces, and I know we do too. So what do you think we should start with? You know, what is the thing that you want to start with today in terms of discussions?
The first thing I think we should talk about is mind-body medicine, or the mind-body connection.
Yeah.
Essentially the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's this idea that our mind and our perception is intimately linked to our physiology.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I really want people to understand this, because it's a game changer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it ties in nicely with what you guys teach. Mm-hmm. Like it absolutely does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
I think there are people that believe, and I've been there myself, that the body, the physical body, is independent of the mind on some level.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening in it, we have ailments and we have problems and challenges, but they're not to do with how we think.
This is one of the things that we, I think, across the board with what we do. Like, we teach about money, right?
Mm-hmm.
People don't understand that how you think affects your finances, how you think affects your relationships, how you think affects everything that you have in your
everything,
life.
Everything, right.
And one of the things that some people have struggled with, and particularly people who are unwell, struggle with, is the fact that there's a connection between how they think and what's going on in the body. And yeah, so talk to us about that. Talk to us about how that even works. So to someone who has no concept and thinks that they're totally unrelated, can you explain how that works? Where would you start?
I was just going to say, it's beautifully encapsulated by the saying, as you think, so you shall become, which ancient mystics and teachers, the sages, have agreed on this one thing for thousands of years.
Yep.
What you think is what transpires in your life.
Yeah.
So from a body point of view, I think most people would be comfortable with the idea that there's a nervous system in the body. It's broken down into different bits. There's central nervous system, there's peripheral nervous system, there's involuntary and there's voluntary. And the name that we use for the involuntary nervous system is autonomic nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
All that means autonomic is automatic. Mm-hmm. So there's something going on all the time that regulates your breathing, regulates your heart. You don't need to think to make your breathing. You can with breathing. There is a voluntary component to breathing.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it does its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this autonomic nervous system really is the mediator of the connection between the mind, and you have brain, you have a physical brain, and there's something beyond that which we call mind, and there's thoughts, and what are they? They're hard to define, and where are they? Are they tangible? Or now, how you think, so thoughts in the brain or thoughts in the mind being mediated through this automatic nervous system out to all of the cells in your body. So we can divide this automatic nervous system into two branches, and people will be very familiar with this. There's sympathetic, which is fight or flight, and people will go, yep, I know that. And then there's parasympathetic, which is rest and digest.
Mm-hmm.
People also call that feed and breed.
Mm-hmm.
There's two major neurotransmitters that, or if you imagine that there's the physical nerves that go out, and then from the nerves is released a substance that moves out to the cells and tells the cells how to interact. Mm-hmm. And they are on one side, fight or flight is your adrenaline and your cortisol, which people mm-hmm. would be familiar with. Mm-hmm. Stress reaction, cortisol, adrenaline, you know, evading a predator, everything's really high alert and engaged. Mm-hmm. Other side, you have something which people may not be familiar with, which is called acetylcholine, which is plays the polar opposite of the adrenaline, if you like. That calms the system down.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've got an automatic nervous system. We've got two divisions. We've got the neurotransmitters or the hormones going out to the cells of the body. And at the top of that is your brain and your perception.
Right.
In order to have good health and balance in the body, you need to have a balance between these two nervous systems. Now, we're a unique species because, excuse me, we can switch on the nervous system through thought alone. Mm-hmm. If you imagine a deer or an animal out in the wild, it is attacked by a predator, the cheetah comes at it, it runs away, its sympathetic nervous system, its fight or flight is highly activated to, it's designed to keep it alive. Mm-hmm. We want that. It's not something to fear, it's not something to, it's natural.
Yeah.
But it switches on in this deer for a defined period. 10 minutes later, you see the deer calm. Eating.
Yeah.
Its ears aren't pricked up, its head down, and it's grazing. The predator's gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't ruminate and keep running the thoughts, unlike us, the sort of most advanced ape.
Yeah.
We can switch that mechanism on with our brain again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, picture someone has a fear of public speaking, they get up and speak, they have some kind of catastrophic event. And then
that's never happened to us before.
That's not today, by the way. and then they go home and they relive it and they relive it and they just keep playing it in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, the body does not know what is whether it's happening or not. It's imagined, not. Yeah. We're generating it in the brain over and over again. It's being mediated through. There's another part to this, which is called the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal gonadal axis. Now, that's a long-winded way of saying there's a part of the brain called the hypothalamus, which you can think of as a sort of master governor, like a switch that, it really oversees a lot of the hormones in the body.
Mm-hmm.
That goes out to something called the pituitary gland, which medicine calls the master gland. Many hormones and neurotransmitters are released from there, which then go out to manage your adrenal glands and your, so things like adrenaline and cortisol. You also have your gonads involved in that, which is your ovaries and your testes, your estrogen, your testosterone.
Yep.
So it's a complex system of hormones and nerves.
Right.
But the main thing to take away is that through perception, and I use that term to mean what you think has transpired,
yep.
That can unbalance those two nervous systems. So if you keep reliving event, or you're telling yourself that this is the way that it's occurred, or you have a story,
yep.
and it's unbalanced in the mind, like a mind rigidity, you can't forgive, you're carrying anger,
yep.
you then have an unbalanced autonomic nervous system. So you might be sympathetic heavy, where lots of adrenaline and cortisol, or you might be the other way heavy.
Yep.
And what that does is that flows out to your cells through the hormones that I've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
What do the hormones do? Well, they bind to the cells. All of the cells of the body, imagine a circle with another circle inside it. One is the nucleus, and then there's the cell with the cell wall.
Yep.
That the cell wall, we know, and you can go and look at the works of Bruce Lipton. I'm sure you know, Mitch.
Yep.
And Mills. The cell wall or the cell membrane is the brain of the cell. It has all of these receptors, little docking stations on it. Your neurotransmitters that I've talked about, your cortisol and your adrenaline from the fight or flight, will bind to that. Why is this important? It's important because when you are under challenge and you're sympathetic, your fight or flight, all of the energy and all of the constituents in the cell move to the cell wall to defend it like a castle.
Yeah.
Okay. Instead of going into growth and regeneration, which is the whole point of why I bring this up, the energy and the constituents of the cell move out to the wall like guarding the castle. And then you don't have regenesis, healing and rejuvenation.
Yep.
The opposite is true. If you have you're in a state of support, mm-hmm. and you know, you have the constituents of the cell moving to the nucleus inside, mm-hmm. and that causes regeneration, it causes growth, it causes mitosis, the cell to start to heal.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So to put that, I know that's very long-winded and probably quite medicalized, no, but the point is, what do you think about translates into your physiology? To say it another way, your psychology equals your physiology. Mm-hmm. To say it another way, unbalanced psychology equals unbalanced physiology. Mm-hmm. So there's no escaping the idea that what's happening in your mind translates into your body and is how disease
is created.
Is created.
Mm-hmm. Which is a dis-ease, is a dis-ease in how you're seeing things, you'd say. If you,
right.
If you're seeing it incorrectly, it's at a dis, it's in a state of dis-ease. So it's not, you're not in a state of ease with it. So you're aware of how we help people to handle that. But if and if you are dealing with anybody out there, you're dealing with someone in who's coming into the surgery, who you can see is going, is dealing, is has something distorting or has something stopping them from, you know, you can see its cause, right? And How do you help them manage it? What do you say?
Well, it really depends on what, how accepting that person is. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to just go from a skip and a jump into what the other factors are. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We know there are physical factors in the body. We know that people can bend over, slip a disc and have, you know, a disc protruding on their nerve that's going down to their leg causing pain. Mm-hmm. There's physical, for sure, but there, it's not that there is only the mind.
Yeah.
There is the body, there is the mind, and there's spirit and beyond.
Yeah.
But it's really trying to feel out what that person is ready for.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And everyone is on their own journey based on what they want to do. Some people, and this is the thing, the model is so prevalent that it's people believe there's only one model, mm-hmm. some people, which is that it's a physical ailment. Mm-hmm. And needs a physical treatment every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes, we talked about this last time briefly, that if someone has an acute trauma, has an acute injury, there's a physical solution that's required, a surgery, you know, a cast, an immobilization. Mm-hmm. But when there are chronic diseases, and that could be autoimmune disease, which literally means the body, the mind turned against the body, or somebody attacking themselves, autoimmune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are other things, and if you can't move past the physical, if you stay in the realm of all we have is tablets for this, mm-hmm. you don't really, that's why we can't nail these things. Mm-hmm. You know, you can talk to immunologists, you can talk to rheumatologists, the joint specialists, you can talk to the nervous system, the immune system specialists.
Yeah.
And they've got...
So let me, just before we dive into, and we go down the hole, are you saying that... We're coming into a point where people are becoming more open to that concept, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that has been the hidden handle on the door for immunologists, for, you know, for psychologists to be able to say, we have to go away from just being, you know, trying to be able to solve these problems by just, you know, giving you a pill.
Looking at one aspect of the problem instead of the whole thing.
We know in terms of physiology, you know, when it comes to breaks or anything like that, they're really, really good. But when it comes to this other end, which is the emotional end of things, they've ignored it for so long. Have you seen that there's now an opening for the fraternities to start to look at that?
It's it's sort of twofold. There is a new emerging field called psychoneuroimmunology, brain, nervous system, immune system.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And people are researching heavily, some people internationally, and that exact interface, what's happening in your mind, how it's translating into your nervous system, how that's suppressing or boosting your immunity. Mm-hmm. I think on a standard model, most... I mean, the specialists around me, they've read the same books that I have in the system. So they're teaching the same medical model. It's and they're up against problems because they have a handful of tricks to manage what's really complex, which is not working.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you have a young woman comes in with, let's say, lupus, for example, and she goes and sees the immunologist and is started on immune suppressants, which there's a role for sometimes. Started on, you know, steroid medications and things that dampen down the immune system. So the immune system's attacking itself, and then they have a handful of things. But ultimately, people tend to be feel like it's not enough. Mm-hmm. And what I see is people that have turned away from the system, and they say, you know, the specialists say they can't do anything else. Yeah. I've just got me on this drug. I don't feel good taking it. Mm-hmm. And I sort of feel like my hands are bound. I don't feel like I've been shown any other ways to get around this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you hear all these amazing stories about people that have gone and said, okay, that's part of it, but I've gone and learned how to live well, and I've nailed this. Mm-hmm. I've got rid of it.
Yeah. Right.
I've cured it in my own body.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, I have, for sure.
Right.
Definitely cases of people that have turned around their nutrition, turned around their mind, made self-care a focus of their life.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And turned it around.
And turned it around. Mm.
So do people in the medical profession see that as like a miracle, or is it like because
I think normally what you would hear from a doctor when you go back and say, they'd say, well, just keep doing what you're doing. Would you agree? They'd just keep doing whatever you're doing. Yeah, it's working. Just keep doing what you're doing. We don't know what the fuck you're doing. And we can't, I suppose, totally agree, because we have to stick with this narrative. But whatever you're doing, just keep doing what you do. I mean, over the years of my career, I've heard that so many times.
Mm-hmm. I think that's where the term spontaneous remission kind of was born. And there's a huge database, something like 3,000 cases or something of spontaneous remission, people that have been given diagnosis of cancers, seen on scans, thyroid cancer, see it on a scan. The person goes away, does some kind of intense shamanic work, or maybe they use psychedelics, or they do a deep heal with a trained, you know, specialist in something else. And I quote one story, which is someone with thyroid cancer who went to a conference, and like a healing conference, and was on the floor with a group of people around them doing healing on them, some kind of intention-based prayer healing. And the woman, she saw the cancer on her thyroid gland in her mind.
Mm-hmm.
Melting like an ice, like a cube melting off the gland itself.
Mm-hmm.
And she had this profound experience. She went and then had the repeat scans immediately after, and there was no cancer. And it had been proven on the scan before.
Mm-hmm.
So something happened in that human's body and mind to heal that.
The thing is that most, I mean, I think 20 years ago, most people would think you were fucking crackers saying something like that. I think nowadays, I think people are becoming more open to the fact that spontaneous remission, spontaneous healings are very, very real, and there's tons of it documented, you know. And that doesn't include what's not documented. You know what I mean? People that haven't gone in and documented their own remission or their own healing. And, you know, I remember years ago working with my chiropractic friend. He, you know, he said something to me one day that was just so simple, and it's still simple, obviously, today. He said to me, you know, when you cut yourself, Mitch, who heals it? Do you think the Band-Aid heals it? Do you think the doctor heals it? Do you think the pill heals it? No, you heal it. Ultimately, you are responsible for your own healing. And I think what we're talking about here is we're talking about healing, you know. I don't know how you feel about it, but the way I've seen it over the years is that healing starts in the mind. You can cut a cancer out of a body as much as you want, but if you haven't healed it in the mind, who's to say it? You know, that connection won't cause it again. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does. There's innate healing wisdom in each of our bodies, and I think we've forgotten that.
Mm.
There are times when there's a role. I'm not suggesting that everybody go out and stop their chemotherapy or stop looking at other sort of things that are working for them, but it's about trying to have, sounds dirty, but holistic approach, the word, like it's totally overused now, but getting that person to flesh out what it means. Just to turn up and have the chemo is not enough. The person needs to target the other domains of their life. That's eating clean, that's doing the cognitive based work, that's making, you know, forgiving and letting go of old traumas and old rigidities in the mind.
Yeah. I think I kind of liken it to, I suppose, somebody thinking they're going to get healthy by going off to a retreat for a week and thinking that that's going to sort it out. But then they come home and they put themselves in the same situation, same habits, same environment, and they're going to go back to how it was before because they haven't, nothing's actually changed. Something on the surface out there, they're thinking something out there is going to fix it, you know, instead of going, okay, well, actually what part do I play in this? How can I don't know, step up and show up for, like, you know, what else have I done that's helped to create this situation in some way?
There's also a much greater, I mean, a much greater opening to that now. You know, I always saw the divide, because I spent a lot of time around chiropractors years ago, I always saw the divide between the holistic chiropractor and the medical chiropractor, and they fucking hated each other. Like, there was a real disdain. You know, the holistic view of anything within that, the organizations, was just poo-pooed, you know, and it was all, you know, it was all nuts and bolts for the other side. But I think that now, you know, there's definitely a greater lean into looking at the causes from the mind as to how, what is causing illness. I think I also suppose it's location specific in terms of country and that sort of stuff, you know.
I was just going to say, to reflect on what Mills said, if somebody's guiding you back into yourself, I think that's, you know, the idea of gurus and stuff. You are your own guru for everything. Sometimes you need guidance and you need assistance, but if someone is consistently guiding you back to yourself and saying you have the answers, you can, you know, motivating you and empowering you, then that, you know, there's something really in that. I think if someone is telling you to look to the external world for many things, then that needs to be questioned. And then based on what you said there, Mitch, I suppose a lot of it is to do with the things that we cannot explain, we poo-poo and we fear. And that, you could talk about this with science and scientism and what's happening in the world at large now, but if it's written in a medical paper or any kind of paper, carries a lot of authority and a lot of weight, and people, there are proponents and scientists of that that won't accept anything that's not written in a journal.
But so this is something that I think you and I were kind of talking a little bit about yesterday, and I think it kind of relates to what you've just said. Let me just work it out here, how to explain it. We give authority to somebody who's written in a medical journal, or somebody who is, you know, has a standing in society that has, you know, a label next to it, like a doctor or a teacher or whatever, right? But ultimately, I think what you're saying in terms of this mind-body connection, I think what this is, what we've been teaching over the years, is that ultimately the only authority that there is on your life or on you is you. Like, we kind of touched on it in the last podcast that you can go to the doctor and the doctor can talk to you about these are some options, but ultimately the only one who knows you is you. You still have that full right to say what's right for you. And if you scapegoat that to somebody else and you say, oh, the doctor said, or the teacher said, or the someone else said, then you're handing over your own power and your own authority about what's right for you to somebody else. And I feel like there are there are lots of people that I've seen who do that, who go, the doctor just said, the doctor said, the doctor must know. And to me, that's like, that's not true. Like, you know enough about yourself to go, actually, I've had antibiotics before. I've done this before and it hasn't worked. This is not okay. Something else is going on. Like, and you know enough about yourself. So I feel like I think the key with this whole mind-body connection, this is how I see it anyway, is to understand that nothing outside of you that we have that power, that we are, if we can own that power, if we can step into the power and understand that we are responsible for all of that, then we are in that power. You know that?
Yeah, so I say handing over your authority.
Yeah, I say that responsibility is the greatest form of empowerment, right? And I talk about taking responsibility for anything that happens in your life in terms of your finances, in terms of your relationships, etc.
Yeah.
But that covers your health as well. If you're if you are responsible in terms of who you are and in terms of what you put into your body, who you listen to, what's other authorities you take advice from, that's all well and good. But if you are responsible for it, then you are. That's when you are empowered as a human being.
And,
in your
health. I think also it's important to understand that it's okay to take advice.
Yes, of course.
I mean, we all
need that, but we.
But
we,
you still got to make your own 100% mind up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's especially at what's happening at the moment, no one holds your freedom, only you. No one can take your freedom unless you hand it over. You know, no one has freedom over your body. No one has authority over your body. No one has authority over your mind unless you hand that stuff over.
You hand it over, yeah.
I mean, taking advice is really just a process of information exchange.
Yeah.
And it's taking in information that somebody else has, looking at walking around the issue, seeing it from different angles, taking in the relevant information, trying to add as much information to get the broadest picture and then to make your decision. So,
but sometimes when you're in that, excuse me, that fight or flight mode, you know, the cat is coming at the panther or the cat or whatever you want to call it is coming at the cheetah, is coming at the deer. The deer just wants the quickest solution, right? So what people have to understand is that when you're in that, you first get the shock of a diagnosis or you first get the shock of something, you just want the quickest outcome. It's that primitive part of your brain kicks in, and you know, because it becomes very black and white, I want it now, I want the fix now, where's the fix, I got to get it now, I got to sort this out now. And rather than understanding that that is a natural part of what will happen to you, but you then have to go, okay, I'm still going to gather my data. I'm still going to, you know, I'm not just going to go to the doctor and take the pill and think that hunky-dory is going to just turn up. It's not going to happen. You have to understand that you have a fight or flight system. When you first hear something that shocks you and sends your adrenal glands into that state of fear, and then you feel yourself in that fight or flight thing, you have to just let that process just run and take its natural course and understand that it will calm down, and then you know the logic of the heart, the logic of the mind will kick in, and you'll start to navigate your way around things.
I'm glad you bring that up, because that is the survival mechanism. We know that when you're fight or flight activates your adrenaline. What does it do? It causes your eyes to dilate, to become very big, so you can see around you, so you get the broadest view of the horizon. You're under threat, something is chasing you, your eyes dilate, you've got a broad view of the horizon. It mobilizes energy, so your glucose and oxygen going to the brain, going to the other tissues, the muscles that need it. The tubes on your lungs, your bronchi, open up to allow the most air into your lungs. Your gut shuts down. It doesn't send blood to start digesting a meal, because you're about to be the meal.
Right.
The blood flow goes to your skeletal muscles in your legs to allow more blood so you can get away from that predator. But it doesn't switch on your executor. You know, you're not there to start having a conversation and thinking what is rational and logical. You're there to get away. So we know that you move out of your executive center and away from, more towards your amygdala and your reptilian brain when you're in fight or flight. That's why people notoriously make really bad decisions when they're under stress. You ever seen anyone who's just really put under something and they just do the worst thing? We've all done it. And you're like, gosh, I would never, why did I do that? I would never do that. Because you're not thinking. And you can't be thinking, making good rational decisions when you're in fight or flight.
But like you said, it's important to be in those places and in that state at certain times, because it protects you. That's our survival mechanism. But but whereas animals will go back and go back into that calm state, we don't do that. We use our brains, we keep ourselves in that state, keep ourselves in that heightened awareness. So what would you say to somebody who has come to you and, like, just give some, I suppose, maybe an understanding for how people can be aware that that's what's happening for them? How do you deal with it if somebody's coming in and is open to, you can see is open to seeing that there's another side of it? How do you help them to be balanced so that in their mind, I mean, I know how we do it. How do you help, how do you, from your perspective, help them in that?
You sort of hit the nail on the head when you use the word awareness, which is one of the biggest parts, is actually getting the person to bring it into presence and know that there is something going on.
Right.
If you're not aware of it, then you're the battle is beyond you.
Yes.
So knowing that there is more happening in the head, you know, in your head, like I see many people who struggle with sleep, for example, mm-hmm. and people come in and they're like, I just want a sleeping tablet. And mm-hmm. we know that the sleeping tablets are have, you know, a lot of bad side effects. Mm-hmm. They're yep. addictive and they cause more harm than they're worth. Again, there's that quick fix, but you need, I start to unpackage people's lives, and you don't have much time in general practice, but figuring out why. And most people, many people are ruminating before bed. Some people are sitting with their big plasma screen TV on, irradiating them, right? And, you know,
yep.
delaying the release of their melatonin and yep. the circadian mm-hmm. rhythm from their pineal gland.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or people are reading their work emails, which put them in a state of stress right before bed. I'm sitting yeah. smiling.
Obviously. I'm looking over here at somebody.
Can relate to that.
Yes.
Mm. Or, you know, thinking about all of the worries of the day yeah. while you're in bed. Yeah. Not a good way to get yourself off to sleep.
No. That's right.
You're just triggering that adrenaline cortisol. That doesn't yeah. put you to sleep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what you need to do is get yourself onto the other side, which is into a state of parasympathetic,
mm-hmm.
the rest and digest.
Yeah.
Easy way to do that is breathing.
Yeah.
And a great way to do that is meditation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then would you say it's also about just instilling, helping them to instill different habits
mm-hmm.
so that because somebody who's so used to being in that stress state, it'd have to be a practice to come back out of that state. They
yes.
would literally have to be very, very, very conscious to bring themselves out. So the first step is awareness, and then the next step is to actually put into place some habits that mm-hmm. actually consciously help them to do that. Is that right?
And this is why it can be so tricky. I like to teach people to cultivate a relationship with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We're all busy running around trying to be so many things for other people.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, in the last 5 years, what I've really taken away is a relationship with myself.
Mm-hmm.
I like being in my own presence, and I have, you know, mm-hmm. a monologue and a dialogue. Yeah. And spending time with myself where I know I'm doing a practice
mm-hmm.
daily that is allowing me to manage.
Mm-hmm.
When I run into people and I'm like, how do you self-care? And they go, the head tilts and they're like, what?
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, gosh, we need to like cut this right back and start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It really is a practice. It's not something that you just pick up overnight, but mm-hmm. you kind of fall in love with the practice of it once you start to see some gains and you're mm-hmm. like, wow, this is how I settle my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. We've got this wild animal in our head. Nobody teaches us how to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just grow up unleashed on the world, wreaking havoc on people.
Yeah.
With our traumas and our judgments and
yeah.
ourselves.
Yeah. Mm.
I think there's a huge amount of awareness now in teaching people to understand that beast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to learn to put a saddle on it.
Mm.
It's interesting because, you know, you're doing it from your perspective, from the physical first. We try and do it from the mind first, don't we? Like, you know, we've had people who have had all sorts of different things. Like one girl many, many years ago had a massive issue with her asthma, you know, her breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until when she came through and did some work and actually shifted her perception, her asthma stopped.
Right.
Literally stopped. And it was all to do with her mindset and feeling like she couldn't speak.
We catch up with her every couple of years. You know, I think last time was probably about 2017.
Mm, something like 17, that. 17, yeah.
18. We were saying, how's your asthma going? She goes,
gone.
Gone. No asthma. Used to spend, you know, I think she was spending up to $3,000 to $4,000 a year on asthma medication. Mm. Once she clicked, because her mum was really loud, you know, Greek, and really talked over everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And once she got the mother, asthma was gone. And we've seen tons of that stuff.
Yeah.
Some people listening to this will find it hard concept to get their head yeah. around, or will find it unpalatable, yeah. to use that word again.
Yeah.
Mm. But we know that respiratory illnesses tend to be linked to frustration
mm-hmm.
yeah.
and a feeling of metaphysically to do with suffocation or to do with not having control or being frustrated. So
yeah.
if you can dig into the source of what the frustration is, which is what you guys did for that woman.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, yeah. that and so the thing is, it wasn't the intention to get rid of the asthma. She was just coming in to sort out what was going on for her in her life and yeah. what was happening. And it had materialized in other ways, you know, and one of the ways it had materialized was the physical, you know, which was the asthma. But, yeah, there's so many, we've got so many stories like that. I love that. It's just, I feel like now I feel like more and more people are starting to understand that. And then sometimes in this current climate, I'm also feeling less people are starting to understand that, depending on who you talk to. But I think it's so important to be able to approach, I suppose, everything that we do in our lives, including especially our health, but including our health, you know, from that holistic perspective. It's not just what you're doing on the outside, it's also what you're doing on the inside. Mm. It has to be both.
Right, so that's exactly the message I want to get across as well. It's important to avoid the cigarette smoke. It's important to avoid the allergens that you know trigger your lungs.
Yeah,
that is part of it. Definitely, 100%. Don't think that I'm saying, oh, asthma's in the mind and doesn't, you know, when I go near the dog and I'm highly allergic, it doesn't affect me. It will.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But it's the other stuff. It's about doing the whole package.
Yeah.
And I think there's recognition growing around the rest of the package.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, we're mental, physical and spiritual human beings. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not mental and then we're spiritual and then we're all one.
Yeah.
It's just a different way of looking at the being. You know, you look at it from the physical, you look at it from the mental, you look at it from the spiritual, but we are all three.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, technology and emerging sciences are allowing us to actually understand who, you know, what frequencies we are, how frequency affects our lives, you know, how we can regulate our frequency, we can regulate our emotions, how that affects us physically. And I think it's a really extraordinary time to be alive when all of that is happening, you know. Where years ago it was, you know, the metaphysicians were considered as kooks or spooks or, you know, but there is a coming together of, you know, science and philosophy and science and religion, whatever you want to call it, but there's definitely emergence happening and it's cool to be having this conversation and be part of that.
It's actually amazing and that's the interface that we're seeing play out.
Mm.
There is a section within modern medicine, modern science that's dogmatic. Caught up in matter being the only thing, coming at it from a material basis only, and then there's all the more dogmatic push there is there, the more there's a rise of people saying, well, no, it's we're metaphysical, we're energy, we're matter, but underlying that we're also energy, and these are the other gifts that we can take away from that, both in healing, in everything,
You know,
the door's wide open.
Absolutely.
I really like that. I've loved that conversation. Anything else you want to share right as we finish up? Any way to summarize?
That's a shame. We're finishing up already. How long have we got?
To summarize,
how long do you need to summarize?
You can come back and we can talk some more. So
no, that's fine. There's a few other things I wanted to go into, but we can talk about behavior change next time.
Yeah,
cool. And sort of we've sort of put the idea out there about responsibility and and balance.
I think how I was seeing just as you were talking just at the end there, Mitch, that really. I think starting to put into practice the understanding that you're not just a physical being, you're also a mental being, a spiritual being, and all of those make you whole. And to try and balance all of those three things out and making sure that you have awareness of who you are, have awareness of when you're under stress and pressure and when you're in that state and putting and actually taking the opportunity to put into practice and to put into habit, you know, to make habit, the balancing that out, you know, being able to put into practices that will help to balance that out.
Yeah, I think you've said it nicely. So cultivate a relationship with yourself.
Yeah.
Find a daily mind practice, find a daily breath practice and find a daily body movement practice.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Create a ritual with it and, you know, start taking responsibility for things, listen to others, take advice with a pinch of salt, get the information, but also see how it applies to you as an individual.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Cool.
Thanks, Dave.
That's all right.
See you again
soon. Absolute pleasure. Thanks.
Hey, whether this is you at the beginning of your personal development journey or you're perhaps immersed in your growth and transformation, at MJB Seminars, we have everything to help you live an inspired life.
If this episode resonated and you're looking for more information on how to have an actual breakthrough and transform your life, Visit us over at mjbseminars.com.au and book yourself in for a complimentary discovery coaching call.
Also, make sure you like and follow us over on Instagram and Facebook, and review and subscribe to Dorothy and the Dealer today.